Position number 11961, rule 5.
Mr. Miller, rule 5. We were talking about when you were wounded by a shell You, it actually knocked you out, did it?
I didn't know nothing. Not from then till I got. I don't know how I got back home. I don't know who picked me up. I was absolutely. Knew nothing. And I was brought back to Birmingham University. That was a military hospital at the time.
Now, what were you actually. You said you were shell shocked, but were you wounded as well? I mean. Is that when you got wounded in the hand?
Yes, that's right. Yeah. Well, of course, shrapnel, you see.
Where did the shrapnel hit you exactly?
Shrapnel shells. Well, it must have hit me in my hand and my arm.
Your arm was wounded as well, yeah. And you lost two fingers on your right hand.
Yeah.
So what's the first thing you remember after that happening?
Well, you can't remember anything. When I come down to the hospital, they told me that my parents had been to see me, but I didn't know.
So that's when you came round in Birmingham Hospital?
Yeah.
And whereabouts exactly were that? Was at the university, you said?
The university in Birmingham, yeah. It was a military hospital. But they said they'd notify my parents when I come round, and which they did do. When I come round, they notified me dad and my mother would come and see me when I was able to get about.
How did you feel when you woke up? I mean, how badly were you?
Well, I was very pleased I did wake up, really, because I was in a nice, comfortable bed, you know. It was a shock of my life. I think, good God, where am I? What am I doing here? I asked the military orderly. I said, where am I? What place is this? He said, don't you know? I said, no. He said, you're in Broome. Good God, I said, no. I held his hand and shook his hand. So,
you were pleased to be out of it.
Yeah.
Did they give you much? Did you have shell shock? Had it affected your nerves? Were you a bit shaky?
It affects everybody. A fella, if that's what I had, if I'd have gone into that, and I'd have got killed, I shouldn't have known. That's the feeling. I shouldn't have known. And you can take it from me that 9 out of every 10 of them lads that went over there and got blasted or got blown away, they wouldn't know nothing about it.
But had it affected your nerves afterwards? I mean, did it make you jittery?
Oh, of course. Weeks or months after, when you were laying sleeping, you know, you wake up with a fright, a shock, you see. But it works off in due course.
Now,
it takes time, though.
Did you get good treatment at Birmingham Hospital?
Yes. Well, what they've done, you see, as soon as they get you there, you got the military orderlies. They bath you, give you a bath you, because you're useless, you see. And they bath you. Your clothes are put in incubators and they're washed. And while all that's happening, they give you a blue jacket, blue trousers, and a white shirt and a red tie. And that's what you wear until everything is clean and what is. As soon as that's done, and you're capable of discarding your blue suit, you take that off and hand it in, and then you put all your usual clothes back on, and they're clean and perfect.
Were you up and about fairly quickly?
Pardon?
Were you up and about fairly quickly?
Oh, what would I say? That would be about a month.
In the hospital?
Yeah.
Were you upset about your hand?
Well, of course, you feel strange, you know. Think, well, because it's all bandaged up and wrapped up, you don't know whether you've got one off, two off, or the other off.
Didn't they tell you?
No, you just wait and see for yourself. But of course, then we're sent out on convalescent.
Where did you go to convalescent camp?
Oh, Sutton Coldfield. Then was...
Was that... That's Sutton Park, was it?
Sutton Park, yes. Then was a Gentleman's Sons. They formed what they call a city battalion. A city battalion.
And they'd been there, had they?
Oh, they'd been there in the Woodnuts. Well, when we got relieved, of course, they got us out of the university as soon as they can, because they had casualties coming in all the time. Well, when we was released, we went to these Woodnuts and took their part, but they went out to replace our losses in France.
To join that, your battalion, or as a whole battalion?
To join our battalion, the Warwickshire, the city battalion, you see. But they got cut up. They got cut up as well as us.
And I understand they'd left their mark on the neighbourhood, though, you were saying. can you tell us that?
Oh, well, of course, it was rumoured, you know, that there was... They'd left another army back in Sutton Coldfield as well.
What, they got all the local girls pregnant?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Do you know whether that was true or not, or was it just a rumour?
Oh, well, I've been saying, you've got to take a bit of salt with it, didn't you? I've been saying, I don't like painting anybody black.
Now, you weren't far from your home at Erdington, were you?
No. I used to go home every night and get a sleeping outpost and go and sleep at home.
What did your family think? I mean, you'd been wounded. How did they feel?
Oh, well, I've got photographs at home where that time of day, with the streamers and the Union Jacks and all the...
When you came back?
Yes, all the palaver, you know.
So they made a big fuss of you when you were wounded?
Yeah. All hanging out and, you know, fairy lights and... Of course, there was no electric lights, fairy lights then. They was little coloured... What is it? You put a night light in them. With some water or something, and they lit them, and they last, you know, all night. These little candles, they'd be red, green, blue, all different colours. But they made hell of a fuss. When we was at the hut in Sutton, we used to get the gentry who come there with big cars. They'll take you for a run round and cigarettes galore, chocolate galore. Oh, they absolutely thought the world of us, you know. Of course, it dies out eventually.
How long were you at Sutton Park then?
About 3 or 4 months.
So into the winter then?
Oh yeah.
And where did you go from then?
Where did we go from there? Oh, what they done, they sorted us out, and they dispatched a certain amount to what they call the provincial army.
Battalion?
Yeah, well, it was army, but there was battalions all over the country. They were provisionals.
And which one were you sent to?
I was sent to one not far from where I was at Sutton Coalfield. But when we got there, there was only six of us. Warwick was sent. These here lads was either conscripts or forced into the army, or fellows that was unfit for foreign service, you see.
Well, I thought you'd gone to Aldershot with the Provisional Battalion. Was that after that?
Yes.
OK, well, that's my... So carry on. There were you six, and the others were conscripts.
Yeah, yes. Well, they was like conscripts and fellows that was unfit for foreign service. But anyway, we was there, and they started putting us in with four-by-fours and going back to square.
Basic training.
Going back to square one again. And we hit our heads together and said, "Oh, my goodness, what are we going to do about it? You know, we'll refuse to go on parade." So we refused. And the orderly officer, there's nothing else. He orders about half a dozen blokes out to march us down to the provost sergeant to put us in clink. When we got there, the provost, he says, "What have you lads been up to?" So when we told him, he says, "It's a pack of cards." He says, "You can amuse yourself with these," he says, "till tomorrow." So we took this pack of cards, started playing rummy and one thing or the other.
And he put you in a cell, or were you just sent back to your barrack?
No, we was put in a... we wasn't made prisoners, because we hadn't been... we hadn't been tried, you see. So we was put in a private room with the guard. There was a provost sergeant and six guard, and then a little room away from there was where he sent us in to go and have a game of cards. Anyway, when we got cracking the next morning, the CO, he seemed to have a little bit of intelligence about him when we explained what we thought about it.
You were brought up before him, were you?
Yeah. Took our hats off and brought up before him, and he said, "The least," he says, "that I can give you, fellas," he says, "it's a serious crime." He says, "It's a disobeying order." He says, "quite aware of that." But he looked at it in the right light, and he said, "the least I can give you," and he says, "7 days CB." That was stopping in the barrack. Well, it didn't make no difference. We got no money and we got nowhere to go, because we only had three or six.
What did you have to do while you were on CB? Did you have any...
Sometimes I'd get you picking the paper up, or, you know, you were mostly confined to barracks. They hadn't used to give you too much of a duty.
Now, after this, you got given some ribbon. What was that? That was because of that, wasn't it?
Two or three days after, they said, on orders, all expeditionary men to report to the quartermaster stores.
Now, by expeditionary men, they meant people who'd been out to France.
Oh, yes, yeah. Well, of course, we thought we had a good thing, you know. Ooh, storekeepers, we thought we got a storekeeper's job. Instead of that, he gave us this bit of ribbon. And,
what was it like, the ribbon?
Red, yellow and black. Belgium colours.
And where did you have to wear it, or what?
We had to sew it on our shoulder strap. Well, we... got a bloody bottle down there. Give us a bit of ribbon. And we said to the quartermaster, what are we going to do with this? He said, go and sew it on your shoulder straps. It was only about, what shall I say, a quarter of an inch wide, that's all. Bit of ribbon. We had a day doing that. So we had two pieces of ribbon on. So, next morning, we paraded, of course. And the NCO, when we'd all fell in, he looked along the line and he says, expeditionary force men, fall in over there. We had to fall in away from the others. And he went round, inspected the others and numbered them off, and away they went over the field to do the drills and that. Then he come over to us. We were a single file. We formed twos. And he said, you two, he says, a train duty. I thought, oh, well, what's coming now? You two, and I was in the middle. You two, he says, cookhouse fatigue. I thought, oh, that's not too bad. We're amongst the group. So anyway, he said, you two, he says, general cleanliness of the parade ground and barracks. He says, now, he says, I don't want to be troubled anymore with you fellas, he says. All I want you to do, he says, is to change over your duties every week so you'll have a fair share of the jobs slotted out. Well, we went at that.
Well, let's have a look. So what would you do? I'll take the cookhouse last, because I know that developed into something. What was the latrine duty like then? What did you have to do on that?
I never done that, to be truthful. But it was hose piping the toilets out, cleaning the wash basins and the taps, and making it spick and span. And
so it wasn't too bad then, anyway.
Oh no.
And the general cleaning of the camp, that was.
Oh.
Could you do that one?
No, I never done that. But
this rotor doesn't seem to work too well.
We had to laugh at this. You see, the Wellicks, they had their cab badge was an antelope, but of course they hadn't got an antelope, so we had an alligoat, and they made it a little blue and gold jacket and that, you know. But anyway, us lads, we used to get together at night and we used to say, what do you do about the latrines? How they used to do the work, you know. And then you'd say to the others, how do you go on for the cleanness of the barracks? Say, oh, they used to go with a stick stick it in paper and pick it up. I said, well, what do you do with all your paper? They said, I don't use to give me the bloody nanny goat to eat it. But, we used to have our little jokes in the game. But anyway...
Now, I thought you were meant to be on a rota. How come you didn't do the two other jobs?
Well, now I'll tell you how that come about. That there was... We used to be in the cookhouse. We used to be cleaning... We used to be cleaning potatoes, cleaning cabbage, and washing up the utensils after the cooks and all that, you know. And one day we finished pretty early, and there was a sergeant. He was making some pastry for the officer's mess. Now I went and stood by him, and I says, you don't object to me watching you, have you? He said, why, are you interested? I said, I'm interested in anything I know nothing about. He said, He said, you're a Brummie, you know? I said, yeah. He said, well, I'll see what I can do for you. I said, thanks a lot. He was a sergeant. So, he says, I'll see what I can do for you. I said, fair enough. And about 3 days after, 4 days after, I was up in orders to go on a cookery instruction at Aldershot.
So that's when you went to Aldershot?
That's when I went to Aldershot.
So now you're not quite sure where the provisional battalion was, but then you definitely got this posting.
But I know where they was. They was posted on at Essex. You see, at Essex, the South Minister.
That's while you were at the catering course.
Yeah.
Well, tell me about the catering course you went on at Aldershot.
Oh, well, it was just a matter of field cooking and, you know, the utensils that you use in and cutting up your meat and having your fatigue party and, you know, to help you. You had to have a fatigue party, of course. But you used to... It was all stew, Dixie. Neck of lamb and breast of lamb. All that used to be stewed. Well, the legs and that, you made an Aldershot oven. And you roasted. You roasted that, you see? You roasted the best parts, and the other parts were all stewed. You put lentils and stuff like that, celery. And
who taught you all this?
Well, it's a cookhouse, a sergeant cook, you see.
At Aldershot?
Yeah.
And how many were there on the course?
Oh, dear.
Roughly?
I wouldn't say how many there were. There was some as I knew was on the course. And some of them I didn't know were on the court.
What about? Let's have a look at the things you did. What were the utensils you had that you had to use?
Oh, well, it was ladles and squashes and.
What's a squasher?
I just squeeze the water out of cabbage with it.
What else?
Mash up your swede. You cook a swede to mash it up with potato. Something like that, colanders and the usual utensils for the cookout. It's
and did they have lots of different sized Dixies to cook in, or was it just
standard sized Dixie, or one sized Dixie?
What else did you have? You mentioned the Aldershot oven. What's that?
Oh well, iron plate on the floor, a sheet of corrugated iron bent that way
in an arch,
yeah, and then closed in at the back, puddled with clay.
What do you mean by that?
Well, wet clay, wet clay, what they call puddlet.
All over the arch?
All over the arch, and all at the back of that, keep the heat in.
And then what?
Then you light your lugs inside your oven, fasten the front up, and puddle that, keep the heat in, and as soon as it gets to the heat and you want it, you put your meat in, put the front up quick, puddle it again, and there it is. And if you've got, we'll say, 4 or 5 shoulders of lamb or something like that in, what the dishes out, we used to call them, and cut a couple of pieces of well cooked up, and then a couple of pieces of underdone, you see, so that they can even please themselves and watch which they liked.
Was it difficult to judge the time?
No. Well, it's the same as if you put a turkey in. You put a turkey in the oven, and you get that about a quarter an hour to a pound after the, what did you know, a 12-pound turkey. You take about 3 or 4 hours. Well, you can go exactly the same with that.
Could you judge the temperature of the oven, or would it?
Oh, there was a, what is the matter, coming through the top. The thermometer pushed into the top.
So you knew how. Could you control the heat at all?
Oh, no. You've got to keep the heat there.
By putting more logs under.
Oh, yeah.
So the logs went under the base plate?
Yes, you've got to keep the heat there. You must keep it.
Were the logs under the base plate?
Yeah. When you started it, you could put some on and some on it. As long as you rake that off the plate clean to put your... In any case, your meat went in on this big tray and you get it eventually and pour the fat off, you know. There's too much fat.
What about pastry cooking? Because that was the thing that had attracted your interest, wasn't it? What was the art of pastry cooking?
The art of pastry cooking was this. You just your flour and margarine, and you mix it with a little drop of cold water, mix it all up. But the art of doing that is when you've rolled your pastry out, you roll it out and you run around your plate or you want it, allow a little bit around on the outside, and then you go around like this.
Pinching it with your fingers.
You got it like that, all the way around like that. That you've got you can either have a single pastry, or you can have one at the bottom and one at the top, which you like. If you want to cover a jam tart in or something like that, you can either have it one or two. But if you get the two, it makes no difference. Well, you just damp it with a little brush. Squeeze them together, and then when you to put your curls, you know what I mean, don't you?
Not really, no.
On the side of a custard, to put them twisted, you don't cut straight like that. You've got to cut like that. And each cut you make puts a curl on that here. It puts your border like curls all the way around your pastry. Then if you've got any pastry left and you want to use it up, you can always make a bit of decoration. You could who make a bunch of roses or some rabbits.
Did they teach you that and the course, or was that something you picked up yourself?
Oh, well, it's when you're doing this, if you've got any left, they say, what are you going to do with that? Well, you don't say you're going to throw it away, because they impress upon you. There's nothing wasted in a cookout.
That was something they deliberately taught you, was it?
It was. And they told me once, I was cutting some celery. And the inman didn't know how to cut celery. When you got a stick of celery, you cut it down from the top to the bottom in four. And then anyone that comes along takes a bit out, and he gets a bit of heart, and he gets a bit of outside as well.